RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. Welcome to Games Galore 54. I am in Harbo Studio in Seagrove Beach, Florida. We got Jason Floyd producing today. Jason Floyd of the MMA Report and RadioInfluence.com. What's happening, Jason?
Doing good, man. Doing good. It's another beautiful day here in Tampa. You'd probably think it's like in the middle of summer, but it's actually like almost November.
Man, it's a beautiful day here as well, but not hot. Are y'all still hot as hell down there?
Oh yeah, man. It's cooling down a little bit, but yeah, we're still like in the 80s. I think we're supposed to get a little cold this weekend, but I won't be here. I'll be up in I'm in Cincinnati this weekend.
Oh, let me see what I made that number. I made Cincy 7 with a total of 54, and I see Cincy's 4.5 with a total of 54. Man, Tampa Bay, their first under the other day. That kind of hurt me. But nice win, despite Jameis taking two sacks, I should say, after the Michigan product fumbled the punt return and the Bucks win on a 59-yarder. That had to be his career long. Did you think he was going to make that?
Man, you know, with kickers, you just never know. I mean, and especially a 59-yarder where you got to hit that thing low, and those kicks get blocked a lot. But you know, he had missed an extra point. He had missed a field goal at the end of regulation, which would have won the game. And I've seen a lot of crazy things being part of the broadcast team, but that's just crazy. I'll say this: Cleveland Browns. Man, they just beat themselves. I mean, just giving first downs and penalties, and you kind of, and obviously I don't get a chance to watch much Cleveland Brown football, but you kind of, when you're in front of see them play, you understand why they've lost all these games. I mean, and they haven't won a road game in, what, 2.5 years or something like that?
It's wild, man. And what wasn't that their fourth overtime game in the season? So I know they went to overtime with –
correct.
Pittsburgh and Baltimore and Tampa. What was the Raiders game in overtime one as well?
I'm not sure, but they've gone to overtime 4 years, and then I know the NFL record is 5 overtime games in a season. Man, it's and the way things are going, they're going to go there. And you know, I heard about the Hugh Jackson comments after the game, and man, that's brutal.
And they had a chance to force overtime against the Saints, but missed a field goal, so they could have already tied that record. They just find a way to lose. And wild Monday night game. So the Bucs get their first under of the year, and the Falcons 5-0 over surge ends against the G-men, and then Shermer goes for 2, down 8, with like 4.5 minutes left. And when you're 1-5 in New York City and you're your first year head coach, why invite criticism by doing something against the grain? And I heard him in the post game presser talking about, oh, we've done the math or the analytics and yada yada and whatever the hell he was talking about. Well, look, dude. If you make the 2-point conversion and you cut it to 6, I mean, all that does for you is give you a chance to kick a field goal. But are you going to – how can you trust you're going to get 2 more possessions to do 2 field goals? And if you miss it like they did, and if Atlanta had not made that 50-plus yard field goal to make it 23 to 12 – if they don't make that and then you're going for 20 to 18 and you don't get it, well, you've just invited the New York City media to just slash and burn you. I don't know what the hell he was thinking. I mean, I guess if he wants to say being aggressive and we cut it to six. I mean, if he wants to say something like that, okay, if there was like, you know, 11, 12 minutes left and you're definitely going to get two more possessions, okay, I might run with that, roll with that theory, but I don't know what the hell he was thinking there. Were you watching?
No, I didn't watch the game, so I
did you hear about it?
I turned the game off around the third quarter. I didn't hear about this. So they score what? They score a touchdown?
Okay, yeah, they're down 20-6. Okay, they're down by 14, and they score a touchdown, and like every coach ever, forever and always and ever and all time, you go for an extra point there. They decide to go for two, and they don't get it. So it stays 20-12. They're down by 8. But even if he gets it, it's 20-14. But there's only 4.5 minutes left. So just like
that.
Go ahead.
Outside looking in, Brian, that to me sounds like a coach who had no faith in his kicker to make a field an extra point.
Extra point. You know what? And if he wanted to say that, I'd be fine with that. He didn't say anything about that. He said, "We've done the math. We've run the analytics. So, I'm not even going to take questions on that. We know what we're doing with that, and we did it right. We just didn't hit the play, yada yada." And I'm like, okay. Well, I've never heard of that, Pat. And if you want to invite the New York City media to just blast you now that you're 1-6, you just gave them every opportunity they could ever want.
Man, that's – I mean, Brian, I've seen a lot of things going up, and that is that's interesting. I mean, that's. I mean, you're spot on. You just open it up to the media to sit there and really question you. I mean, I've always been like this thing of don't chase points. You know, I think there's certain situations going for two makes a lot of sense, but you know, it's just to me, you just don't chase points until you absolutely have to.
Yeah, I've always said you don't go for two until it's the fourth quarter, unless you're down by 24 or 32. Like if you're down, you know, 39-7 and you score right before halftime, you know, by all means, have at it, go for two, trying to make it a three possession game with, you know, 24. Like I remember that when the Jags scored down 24-0, like mid late third quarter, 2 weeks ago, it was right as I was packing up to leave from Biloxi, and he didn't go for two. And Doug Kazarian is a guy I know. He used to be out in Vegas, a TV guy, and he's now with ESPN. And I just tweeted, "Why is he not going for two?" And he was like, "Well, I'm fine with him not going for two." And not in a nasty way. We just kind of went back and forth on it. I just didn't really understand where he was coming from, really. But anyhow, I like Doug. No big deal. All right, so let's talk about Urban Oscar Meyer, because I remember I said it. I was on the radio with Kwok and Kelly in Clemson and Sharp and Benning in the morning, 16-20 The Zone in Omaha, the day after that shit show of a tone-deaf press conference where the three-game suspension was announced. And I said that next morning, I go, "He is not going to be at Ohio State for long. He is livid. He's bitter. He already threw Gene Smith under the bus. You could see how he was so insincere, especially when he kept saying how I support our president and yada, yada. And now you can totally see it in his complete demeanor, his body language. And I've said it back then, but now I'm absolutely guarantee-ing it. He is going to quit like a little bitch before January 10th or 15th or, you know, I guarantee you, he is out of there. I'm telling you, bro. Do you believe me, Jay Floyd, or not?
Man, you think he's going to walk away from all that money, though?
Absolutely. Well, maybe they can reach a buyout of some sort or something. He's quitting. He is quitting. Trust me. Can't you see how unhealthy he looks? He did this same little bullshit at Florida twice.
I'll never forget, man. The first time he did that, I forget we were on the road, and one of the guys I hang out with on the road, he's a big Gator fan. He's got season tickets, and I remember we were sitting there, and I remember him being shocked, and let's just say he's not exactly a he's like you. He's an urban hater.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where you were when you found out about that, but yours truly is the one who broke that story about 5 hours before ESPN had it.
I want to say I was in Atlanta. I want to say I was in Atlanta for some reason.
Probably the Falcons Bucks the next day.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I mean, look, it's if he is not the Ohio State coach 6 months from now, it'd be very interesting to see who they turn to.
I think they're going to turn to Day, the guy that was the interim, the acting head coach. He's really young, and I mean, they played pretty well under him for three games. I think that's who they're going to go to.
You don't think they make the call to Tom Herman and see if he wants to come? Does Tom Herman's agent use Ohio State to get a bigger raise out of Texas?
Right. If it's Jimmy Sexton, that's a given that he'll do whatever he can to get a raise. I guess that's interesting. If you're Tom Herman, do you wanna leave Texas for Ohio State? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of turned that program around at Texas now. You would think, but what if they throw a Jimbo Fisher type offer at you? Can you turn it down?
Whew. Those don't come along very often. 10 years, $75 million guaranteed. You got to have a lot of oil money, and they got more oil money in Texas than they do Ohio.
Yeah, you got to play Alabama twice every, at least once every year. Yeah.
So anyway, our listeners know that I'm guaranteeing Oscar's going to quit. And I want to know, did you see the Devin White hit, LSU stud linebacker who now can't play in the first half against Alabama next week? Did you see that hit?
I did not.
I've heard a lot of a mixed bag on it. I could have seen that not being a targeting. Now I know that there's no jurisdiction for the SEC commissioner to reverse it. It's an NCAA rule, from what Feinbaum has certainly said all week. And by the way, Five Dimes has got an early look ahead line for that game, and it's only Alabama -14. And listeners know I've been pretty bullish on LSU all year. I had them last week. They've been good to me. But that line, it better be more than that, or I'm putting a king's ransom on Bama. Nobody's touching this team, dude. I mean, if it could happen, it would be in Baton Rouge at night. Go ahead.
I'm watching this hit on YouTube. Man, that's it's not awful. I can see why it's called targeting, just because he doesn't really lower his head at all to try to make a tackle. I mean, he goes high on him. There's no question of that. If I'm an LSU fan, man, oof, that's brutal.
Oh, bro. I mean, you know who James Carville is, the political guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God. He was on Feinbaum the other day just throwing out all kind of conspiracy theories. It was pretty outrageous. But, LSU fans are livid. And I don't blame – every college football fan should be livid. Everybody wants to see Alabama get tested, but testing them – is getting a stop or two on their defense or creating a turnover or two. And Devin White is just one of the best players in the country. I mean, just last year alone, he had 133 tackles, 4.5 sacks, 9.5 tackles for loss, 5 QB hurries. Hell, I'm going to pull up his stats for this year. And as I'm doing that, won't you update all of us on – what went down in Vegas today? I saw what Habib's getting at least $1 million of his $2 million payment.
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah, today was just a kind of a formality to extend out their temporary suspensions. The disciplinary complaints actually will go down December 10th in Las Vegas. But part of the discussion was about his $2 million check that was held up. Anthony Marnell, the head commissioner for the commission, basically he his main concern was he wanted basically Khabib's coaches, training partners to get paid. So they're holding $1 million of his $2 million purse. And my guess is, based on some of the things we said today, it wouldn't shock me if they tried to hit him for $1 million fine. You know, but I think probably you're more in the probably $300,000-$400,000 range. Probably has to do community service, whatnot. But yeah, it's not gonna, you know, look, it's gonna cost Khabib a lot of money. I mean, part of this hearing, you know, the attorney general came out and said that, you know, Khabib is the guy who started this melee. And you know, and kind of seeing some tweets and watching some videos after the fact, this to me screams that the governor is telling the commission and the attorney general to lay the hammer down on not just Khabib, but also Connor, because they did say that if they would have had the video that they have now seen of everything that happens, they would have held on to Connor's check as well. So it's, you know, December 10th really is the day to kind of look there and see what's going to happen.
Is the case silent? Is it Khabib or Khabib? Like, you know, like Rafael dos Anjos in Portuguese, the R
is silent. I've heard both.
See, me too. I hear both all the time, so I never know what if I'm right or wrong. I hear both constantly.
By the way, to get back to your college football, I'm just looking at the AP top 10.
Uh-huh.
It, when you look at the top 10, is LSU the biggest one-loss surprise?
Well, let me get to the
AP. Is it them or Florida?
That could pretty much probably be a push, really. A lot of people were bullish on Florida. I wasn't because of Franks. But, you know, LSU's win total was a little bit lower, though. LSU's win total was 7.5. Florida's was 8, and a few books might have even moved to 8.5. I got my AP coming up here. Well, to me, the fact that Washington has two L's is pretty shocking to me. I mean, I certainly consider them a top five team. The 1L teams. I mean, Texas, LSU, Florida. Oh, Kentucky's the biggest, really. And Washington State. Washington State still is undefeated against the spread. And so are the Kansas City Chiefs. Let me go to ATS standings to see if anybody else, or if it's just those two in the ATS Perfection Club. All right, getting there. We had Tuesday night action last night. Troy covered at South Alabama, avenging that L that they took as a 16.5 point home favorite the week after they beat LSU last year. And that one went over. Washington State's the only team that's 7-0 or that's undefeated against the spread in college. And the Mighties are 6-1. Fresno State 6-1. Georgia Southern, Iowa, UAB, Utah State. That's right. Utah State was undefeated. They had their first, and the over was undefeated. They had their first under and their first non-cover last week. A&M, Texas, that is, obviously, is 6-1. And Alex Reithmiller's UVA Wahoos are 6-1 against the spread. And App State, 5-1. And App State ranked for the first time in the AP top 25. Let me give you my rankings. Who would be favored? Oh, no, let me give you Devin White's stats for this year. One fumble return for 29 yards, 76 tackles, six tackles for loss, one sack, four passes broken up, six QB hurries, one forced fumble. He is a monster. Going to be a top 10 pick. It would be like Roquan for Georgia last year. It'd be like losing him going against Bama. Now, he is only out for the first half, but Tua Tagovailoa and Jerry Jeudy usually make sure that the games are over by halftime.
It could be 42-0 by that point.
Exactly. So, and that sequence of – go ahead.
What's the ATS on Alabama's over first half number? Is that still undefeated? Or is Vegas caught up to it?
It was okay. 2 weeks ago, Missouri, it was 29-0-1, and they were up 10-0 midway through the first, and they had like a 75-yard touchdown pass. It got called back for a BS holding penalty, and they ended up getting – they settled for two short field goals in the first quarter. So it's 13-3. They weren't going to get the team total over because of the touchdown callback and the two short field goals. This is – I'm talking first quarter. And with about 30 seconds left, Missouri had a play – that got them like a 15-yard gain, and there was a horse collar at the end. And the next play started with like 10 seconds left. But I knew that he dropped back to pass, and, you know, Alabama rarely rushes only three. They rushed only three, and he had all day to throw, and Drew Lock throws a touchdown pass with 2 seconds left in the first quarter, which was like a $1,500 swing for me in the casino in Biloxi at the sportsbook. Almost had a coronary. Now, I got a lot of it back because I had them in the first half, the team total first half. But they lost team total first quarter and the first quarter against Missouri, and they did not get their team total. So that sequence of plays that was 29-0-1 went 2-3 that day. But so that made it 31-3-1 going into last week. And then they hit them all last week easily. So that made it. So those sequence of plays are now 36-3-1 against the spread for Alabama. That's team total first half, team total first quarter, first half, and game, and Alabama first quarter and first half. So it failed against Missouri, but that's the only time. All right, where was I going to go? I was going to – well – I like the Gators this week. What do you think about the game? Have you seen the spread?
I was looking in my college pool that I pick on, and it had Georgia as a 6.5-point favorite.
Yep. I got the Gators at 7 Monday. I like the Gators. I just, you know, when you're a Gator, you kind of just know those years when you're just going to beat Georgia just because you're daddy. We're 21-7 against them the last 28, but two of them were when our coaches were fired pregame. Zook was fired on a Sunday in 04. The Gators didn't even practice on Monday. And Tuesday, they barely practiced and really just talked to the media about their coach getting fired. And then last year, McElwain made those dumbass death threat comments on Monday. On Tuesday, after he had been meeting with the AD and the, you know, UF's legal people and everything, and he refused to elaborate on what the hell he was talking about, and he told the team he might get fired on Tuesday, and that's all come out this week from players that he had told them that Tuesday. And then I remember waking up in Vegas that Saturday morning early. I mean, you know, like, it was before sunrise Vegas time. And, you know, so it was like 8:39 Eastern, you know, the 3:30 game. So they knew Twitter had already blown up multiple reports. He was getting fired. So two of their W's in the last 28 years were when our team knew our coach had gotten fired that week. So, and then three of them were on Muschamp, who is a Georgia alum. So it's really hard to find some Georgia W's against Florida that were really legit in the last 30 years. I think we're going to beat their ass. Go ahead.
If you can get Florida plus 7, I think they can keep within a touchdown. But, I mean, the quarterback situation at Florida, look, and Georgia's got their question marks with who they're going with. But to me, I think Georgia's going to win the game, Brian.
Well, I don't disagree that Franks, everybody knows where I am at one Franks, although it's getting better. And I think Mullen's doing a great job of calling plays and hiding his deficiencies. And he does have some strengths. I mean, he can run it. He's proved he's a pretty tough dude as well. He's got a great arm, but you just kind of never know where it's going to go. But, I give them the edge at quarterback, even though Fromm looked awful last time out. And if he's looking that bad against a pass rush of LSU, I mean, Florida's got a better pass rush than LSU. And so I can see him, And he's got to be worried about getting yanked as well. I mean, there's a lot of chatter up there that to move to Fields. So as much as I'm not into Franks, and I do think he's more likely to commit a crucial mistake than Fromm, but whatever, bring Fields. Bring a little true freshman out there if you want to against this Gator D. Take some Gator licks. We'll break him into some Jacksonville, Florida, and how it goes down by the St. John's River the Saturday of Halloween weekend. We'll break him in real quick, like.
Yeah, with Florida, it's just kind of, can they take the next step or not? I mean, I think that's really the question. I mean, we've talked about this, leading up to the season. Their schedule was not exactly the toughest schedule in the nation heading into the season. So, it's just, to me, I just think that Georgia has so many more weapons on offense than Florida does.
We shall see.
How are you in Vegas this weekend and not Jacksonville?
Well, when I made plans, I didn't think I really wanted to be in Jacksonville this weekend.
By the way, did you hear who's apparently trying? What team is trying to show up in Jacksonville? Their fans.
Kentucky's? I don't know.
UCF, I guess game day is going to be in Jacksonville on Saturday.
I did see something about that.
You know, they all think that ESPN's out against them. And I know I saw it on game day last week, and Herb Street kind of basically pulled the whole, hey, how about you do a better non-conference schedule? Maybe people will talk more about you. But of course, I mean, the UCF argument is, look, these games are made a couple years in advance, and they played Auburn last year.
They did get hooked. I mean, they were supposed to play Georgia Tech last year. It got postponed. They were at UNC, and I'm sure when that UNC game got scheduled, I mean, what was that, 2 or 3 years ago, UNC had Clemson one possession game late in the fourth quarter of the ACC championship game.
But the problem is, for UCF to get in the top four, so many bad things have to happen in front of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, a one-loss Clemson team will get in over them. I mean, a one-loss Notre Dame will get in over them. I mean, it's just, they've got so many, and the problem is that conference, I mean, they need USF to keep winning, which, by the way, I saw USF's an underdog this weekend.
They are
at Houston. They're a touchdown.
They should be an underdog at Houston.
I'll tell you this, living in Tampa, and of course, I hear it from my USF friends, they also think the media is against them. But this is a team that, man, they have skated by some games this year, barely winning up in Illinois.
Tulsa 2 Fridays ago, wasn't it?
Oh, they should have lost that Tulsa game. Tulsa defensive end hits a quarterback with under 30 seconds to go that puts them right in that position. I mean, they find ways to keep winning. But, man, there were some lines on this week's games that kind of – the USF line jumped out at me. I mean, being a – I saw 7.5 was a spread on that one. There were a couple other games I saw. I was like, man, that's a spread? Interesting. Honestly, I was surprised Clemson was not a bigger favorite than what they are.
I'm surprised Miami's favorite at BC. Cold weather game. Those South Florida boys don't like that cold weather. Remember the Pittsburgh game last year? Pittsburgh was on like a third string quarterback and just beat the mess out of them. By the way, Brian Lewerke, Michigan State's QB, is now questionable. And they also lost their best wide receiver against Michigan last week as Felton Davis goes down with a season-ending Achilles injury. He was second-team All-Big Ten last year. So far this season, he had 31 catches, 474 yards, and 4 touchdowns. So Harbaugh's Big Blue beats up on Sparty and beats up on two of their more important players, and they've got the red-hot Boilermakers coming to town, winners of 4 straight, and the Boilermakers cracked my top 25 this week at 25. Let me just run down mine real quick. 1 Bama, 2 Clemson. Again, for those not indoctrinated, who would be favored over whom in Topeka, Kansas tomorrow is what I base on, you know, neutral field is what I base my rankings on. One Bama, two Clemson, three Oklahoma, four LSU, five Georgia, six Michigan, seven Ohio State, eight Notre Dame, nine Florida, 10 Texas, 11 Washington, 12 Texas A&M, 13 my boys, Mike Leach, Wazoo, 14 UCF, 15 Kentucky, 16 Penn State, 17 the Red Hot Utes, 18 Oregon, 19 Iowa, 20 West Virginia, 21 Stanford, 22 Wisconsin, 23 Fresno State, 24 San Diego State, 25 Purdue. Fresno State is rolling. Jeff Tedford, 17-3-2 against the spread since he took over. Wow. Wow. He is cashing tickets. They've cashed for me the last 2 weeks. Anybody smell an upset in Tallahassee this weekend? Anyone? Bueller?
Bueller? I mean, last week, I'll tell you, Prime, I'm sitting on my couch. It gets 10-0 wake, and I'm like, here we go again. I mean,
Wake went up 10. Here, I got to pull up that box score. I didn't know Wake went up 10.
Oh, yeah. 10-0 in the first quarter. I mean, they get the opening kick, and it's like we forgot how to play defense. I mean, they just go straight down the field. I want to say maybe they got a field goal. It was a field goal touch. I want to say a field goal start. They get the ball back. We can't do anything on offense. We go three and out. Offense, boom, goes right deck, 10-0. And then whatever Willie did, it revitalized that team, and they came out firing. But the thing with FSU is just they got to keep that Clemson offense off the field. You know, they got to keep that defense rested. And I just – look, I love my Noles, Brian, but, man, I can't see how they keep this game close.
Yeah, that's a lot of points to lay, though. It's probably a game I'm going to not be on. I'm going to be with my Seminole buddy. Isn't this an 11 or noon Eastern kick? Oh, that's so great.
It's a noon kick. So that should kind of tell you where FSU is at this point. When you're kicking off at a noon kickoff, that's pretty much that's very telling.
Oh man, y'all are gonna make our Gator FSU game at noon too, because y'all stink so bad.
It's gonna make it even better when we whip that tail.
Oh please, give me a break. I don't know why these books won't post a look ahead line on FSU Florida. They've got so many of them, and they won't. I don't get it. And I guess that Clawson has decided to redshirt Kendall Hinton, who was going to be their starter but got suspended for the first three games. The lefty, the black guy, you know what I'm talking about? He's been their quarterback. Well, he didn't play that much last year. They must have just decided to redshirt him, because I see they played it looks like they played three quarterbacks against you guys.
Yeah, I mean, here's the interesting thing is, I believe, and I'm sure someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but because he really hasn't played, I believe that FSU could potentially redshirt James Blackman at some point to get another year of eligibility. Here's a crazy thing. So in this broadcast, I don't know who was feeding these broadcasters information. They're talking about DeAndre Francois going into the NFL draft next year. I go, who are you guys talking to? There's no like if he's going to the NFL draft, to me that says he's just trying to go out and get paid.
Right. I mean, he'd get drafted, but probably not till fourth or fifth, I would think. I mean, I don't know.
Look, Brian, it's never a good thing when they start going down your checklist of your strengths, and being able to take a sack shouldn't be one of your top strengths.
Right. No. True. This is true. So, did you see my boy Eric Dungy got yanked by Dino last week?
The
redshirt pressure. I could not believe. I mean, I wasn't watching. I read all about it. I don't even know if Dungy's going to start this weekend. Boy, that's a big game. The Cuse host NC State, and NC State is a 2-point favorite. Fedora's got to be in trouble with North Carolina, I would think.
How could he not be?
Yeah, how could he not be?
But isn't there a lot of money left on his contract, though?
You know, I would think that season I just referenced when they, you know, played Clemson. I got their team page right here. So it was 2015. They went 11-3. I would imagine he probably got a lucrative extension right then. But you know, this is the third season since then, so there's probably only a couple of years left on it. I mean, I wouldn't think there'd be more than 2 years left. I don't know. They covered last week against the Cuse, but they still have only won one game. They're 1-2-3. They're 1-5, and they'd be 1-6 if the UCF game hadn't gotten postponed. Take a break here. Games Galore 54. Jason Floyd. Now we got Matt Humans of VSiN coming up here shortly. Don't go anywhere. Back in a few. Happy birthday. The world is at your door. But the music's blaring and I'm passed out. Welcome back. Games Galore 54. Just a short segment here because we got Matt Humans of VSiN coming up in about 10 minutes, but that gives Jason and I a chance to hit on this UFC card that I'll be probably mostly watching football, but I will be hanging out with Gam Liu watching this, and I kind of like Anthony Smith. Wait, now, I'm looking at those, what you were talking about, those underdog odds on him, those are long gone, right? I'm only seeing...
Oh,
I
yeah.
Okay, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, there. I want to say this morning, maybe... he was like plus 160, maybe plus 180, somewhere in that range. But yeah,
I got him plus 160 two or three days ago. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm seeing he's plus 140 on five dimes right now. Yeah, I like Anthony Smith in this one. I don't think this fight goes very long. Both these guys are going to look to slug away. That under 1.5 round minus 120, I think there's there's some good value there. If you like a prop player, Anthony Smith by TKO or KO is plus 245, or Anthony Smith inside the distance plus 179. I mean, look, I think whoever wins, they're winning by knockout.
Yeah. Oh no. And probably in the first round.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would be highly shocked if this thing goes more than three rounds.
Yeah. I concur. So now Michael Johnson, how much notice did he have to take on Artem Lobov? Maybe 3-4 weeks or?
Maybe three at the most.
This is only his third time getting down to 145, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
I've only watched Artem fight once. It was that main event. Who did he fight in the main event? I'm forgetting. Let me click his name. I'll get it right.
Is it the Cub Swanson fight?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Yep. So did you see what Artem said on some interview? The whole thing that started the rivalry with Khabib and Conor was somebody calling one of them a chicken, because in Russian, a chicken is translated to a male Russian who gets raped by another man in jail. Did you see that?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of well known. That's kind of how the feud... It started off with the Artem interview, and everything just kind of transpired after that, right. You know?
Right. Misha Cirkunov, help me if I pronounce that wrong, he's the guy that was doing so well in USC, but Ozdemir knocked him out, right? And then surprisingly, they let him go, and he went to another organization for a while, and now he's back. Am I thinking about the same guy?
Yeah, he had got his contract expired, and pretty much they were going to let him walk. And eventually they didn't get him assigned to a deal. I mean, he was one of those guys, especially at 205 pounds, everyone's always kind of looking for, okay, who could potentially get up there and be a legit challenger to Jones, Cormier, Gustafsson. And he was a guy that people looked at, but, you know, he's lost back-to-back fights by TKO. Pat Cummings, I mean, look, if Pat's going to win that fight, that's Pat just taking him to the ground. I mean, that's what Pat's going to do. I'll tell you, from a betting perspective, there's not a lot that sticks out to me on this fight card. I mean, you know, if you're looking for a dog, man...
besides Anthony Smith. Well, what if Johnson has what if it's clear he has a difficult weight cut? Do you give any thoughts to Artem or no? Johnson, yeah. I mean, I love Johnson, but he has just not been that on point. I mean, he pointed it out. They asked him to call somebody out after a split decision win, which, whew, thank goodness he got that win. I had a lot on him that night, his last time out. And he's like, man, when you're winning by split decision, you don't deserve to call anybody out. So I'm not. Do you remember when he said that?
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, you know, like, I'm just looking up and down just the underdogs in this lineup. I mean, Court McGee's always been a guy I kind of root for. Nordim Taleb plus 100, that's a little interesting there. But outside of that, man, there is just nothing that really sticks out to me about on this fight card.
Right.
You know, I will tell you.
Patrick Cummins knows how to make a fight down dirty and ugly. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him to, you know, find a way to maybe grind out on a close decision. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, next week, Jacare plus 145 is interesting.
Dude, I saw Weidman was favored, and I was like, what? Weidman is so over the hill to me.
And he fell quick, man. Quick.
Oh, boy. His dissension just happened. Well, that beating that Herb let him take against Rockhold, he should have called that fight way sooner. Who was it that got who was it that they were bitching about Herb had a late stoppage here recently? Was it Dolloway?
Yeah, that was
bad.
It was bad. It was bad. And Herb had a bad night. Easy, bad night.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I love Herb, but he had a bad night, that Weidman. Rockhold, man. Remember Rockhold, like, was ground and pounding him from mount, kind of looking at Dean like, what do you want me to kill this guy?
Yeah, man, Herb's had a couple of ones recently.
Now, I don't know shit about Jordan Rinaldi, but I know Mississippi Mean has been slumping, and he's a huge favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that one, Jordan, yeah, that's an interesting line. I mean, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see, by the time fight night gets here, do we see that line on Derek Lewis kind of come down? Because you get a lot of casual people who start putting money on Derek Lewis because they remember what they saw last month.
But, I mean, like, look, if anybody's got a puncher's chance, it's the Black Beast. And, I mean, I'll throw a little 20 spot or something on a plus 500 just for giggles. I'm not recommending anybody take the Black Beast for a lot, but he could catch him with something.
He could. I mean, but the likelihood of that is very small.
And if he does Lesnar fight Jones? Oh, well, they're not going to cancel Jones. I did see Dana had something quote about Lesnar on some MMA site earlier today.
Here's a question mark: if you're Brock Lesnar, if having another MMA fight is about making the most money possible,
well, Jones.
It's got to be John Jones, or is it? Hey, I want to have one more fight, and I want to go out as the UFC champion. Now, I don't think he has a chance of being DC. I just don't. But that, if it's a money thing, you fight John Jones. If it's about legacy, getting back, you know, becoming a UFC champion again, you fight Cormier. But I don't know if you noticed this, Cormier all of a sudden now is like, hey, fellas, if somehow I don't win it next week, I'm not giving up my 205-pound title.
Wait, hadn't that already been done?
Well, they're not gonna technically strip him until the first punch is thrown in Jones Gustafsson.
Gotcha. Okay, all right. I hear that. All right, we'll get back to a little bit of this. Let's take, because I definitely want to. I forget we may have already talked about it, but I'm wondering if his mind is changing. I heard Ortega say there's a replacement for Holloway if something goes wrong with his health. Any guesses on who that is?
Oh, man. I mean,
but it's off the record.
No, I don't know. I mean, my guess would be is they've probably already gone to Frankie Edgar. If Frankie Edgar gets past the Korean Zombie, I would think that, you know, he would probably be the guy that would be next in line, or maybe it's Jose Aldo.
Huh. Okay. Is Jeremy Stevens just totally gone dark since that loss? I feel like I checked his Instagram or his social media a few weeks back, and he hadn't had one post since the day of the fight.
No, I really haven't seen much or heard much about what's going on with him.
Right. All right, let's take a break. Games Galore 54, we come back. VSiN's Matt Eumanns will join us to talk college and NFL. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Games Galore 34, or I'm sorry, 54. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. We've got Matt Eumanns of VSiN joining us from Las Vegas. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Eumanns. That's MattYoumanns, and then 247. Matt Eumanns 247 is his Twitter handle. You can listen to his show on VSiN.com daily. What's going on, bro?
Just looking forward to another college football weekend. Like I said, it's games galore, man. It really is, because I know you're going to be in Vegas this weekend, and I always talk about college football Saturdays like a mini March Madness, and it's awesome. It's an awesome day in the fall to be in Vegas. You got games that kick off early in the morning, and you go late till night. I mean, really, a lot of times you go till like 11 o'clock, close to midnight, and especially if you got a Hawaii football game. I love it, man. I love college football Saturdays, and I really liked last Saturday. It was one of my better days of the year. I actually had Purdue straight up over Ohio State, had some other good plays, but I know that it did not pain you to see your good buddy Urban Meyer get embarrassed and Ohio State get obliterated the last Saturday night.
Oh, it just tickled me pink, and he's going to quit like a little bitch. I guarantee he's going to quit like a little bitch before January 15th. It's guaranteed. There's no question about it. He's already doing all his body language bullshit, acting like a little baby. Speaking of Purdue, I mean, they're on fire, man. Four straight wins, but they've got a tough one. They go on the road to face Sparty, but Lewerke has been downgraded to questionable, and their best wide receiver, Felton Davis, is second team All Big Ten last year. He's out for the season. What's your take on Purdue in East Lansing?
Well, the first thing you do when you see a field storming and a huge win like Purdue had is you check the schedule and say, who's that team play next week? Because I'm going to fade that team. So I think a lot of sharp bettors looking to fade two teams were in that situation last week. One, Washington State, and the other is Purdue. But I don't think it's as simple as that in either case this week, and I'll tell you why. First of all, you just mentioned it. Brian Lewerke's got a shoulder issue, and he was, what, 5 for 25 for 66 yards last week? And his wide receiver core is decimated by injuries. Michigan State's just not a very good offensive team right now, with or without L.J. Scott, the running back. So I don't think it's as simple as saying, well, Purdue's in a letdown spot here, I'm going to play Michigan State. When you look at the Spartans, I think they're in a little bit of a flat spot too, Brian, because they just got their butts kicked at home by Michigan in a 21-7 game. It was really ugly. And Mark D'Antonio spent the past 3 days answering questions about Jim Harbaugh and the Bush League comment and all the controversy that came out of that game. So I think there's a hangover effect for Michigan State coming out of the Michigan game. Yes, there is going to be a letdown for Purdue, no question about it. I don't think any team can avoid a letdown off a win like that, a celebration like that. But if talent prevails at some point in this game, I think Purdue's going to win it. I'm not going to right now. I'm going to hold off on the side. I want to read more, look more into this week. I love Purdue in the Ohio State spot last week, and part of the reason was that Jeff Brohm is just such an aggressive coach and a creative and innovative play caller, and I knew he was going to attack Ohio State's weaknesses, and the Buckeyes had a lot of weaknesses. If you watched them in previous weeks, the run defense was getting shredded. I really thought that Purdue was going to put some points on the board against Ohio State, and, you know, catching two touchdowns in a home dog in that spot was a great play. I'm not sure if I'm going to be on Purdue this week. I don't think I'm going to be against Purdue because what we talked about with Brian Lewerke and just that offense being stagnant. I am going to play, I think, under 51 in this game. I might play a little bit first half under and a little bit on the game under. When I looked at the weather forecast, there's rain possibly in the forecast again this week for East Lansing. If you throw in wet conditions, two teams that might have a little bit of a hangover in the first half, I think we could see a lower scoring game here. Purdue's obviously capable of lighting up the scoreboard, but I think the Michigan State defense will keep this game in check. It could be, I'm not going to say it's going to be a low scoring, ugly game like Michigan State was, but under 51, somewhere around that number, I think could be playable this week in the first half and then the game. And I'm not going to jump on the anti-Purdue train this week like a lot of bettors are, just because I'm not that high on Michigan State. Going into the season, I didn't think the Spartans were that good, and I've really seen nothing here to tell me anything differently, and I think they're going to struggle in this spot. They got to hope Purdue has one hell of a monster hangover in a flat spot in East Lansing this week, because Jeff Brohm is just a better coach, better offensive play caller, and he's got a better quarterback. He's got more explosive receivers, and that Purdue defense is really playing well. So I'm not going to be on Michigan State, but I will play that under. I'll talk about the Washington State game quickly, because I like Stanford a little bit better. When you talk about flat spots and hangovers, I think Washington State's going to be in a little bit of a flat spot at Palo Alto this week, and I kind of feel like it's a buy low with Stanford spot, sell high with Washington State spot here. Cougars out to 27-0 lead last week and almost blew it. And they held on to win that game 34-20. It was a huge, huge win for Mike Leach of Washington State. Gardner Minshew's been phenomenal all season, number two in the nation in passing yards. And Leach is a creative play caller, and David Shaw is not. One thing about David Shaw, he's so damn conservative, man. He's like a grandma who counts rolls of pennies. And he gets a 7-point lead, and he just sits on the lead, runs into the line three times and punts. And that bothers me. I don't like to lay points for the coach like that. And Stanford's offensive line has had issues. But I think to get back on track here this week, I like K.J. Costello and all his receiving weapons. He's got big tight ends. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside on the outside. Bryce Love or not, Stanford doesn't have much of a running attack. I don't think it's going to matter a whole lot here, because I do think Washington State's going to be in a flat spot off that win over Oregon. And Stanford's got a little bit to prove here. It's been a disappointing team, blown out by Notre Dame and Utah. I like this game a little bit better. I'm going to go Stanford -3 and say that the Cardinal will get back on track.
We're visiting with Matt Eumanns of VSiN. You can check out all his content at VSIN.com. Yeah, just to expound upon your point, I mean, David Shaw is in love with 2nd and 12. I mean, they come out of a bye week, man. I bet Stanford's win total over, and I know Caden and his family lives down here really close to me, and I know all them. And I mean, what his dad says, Mark says, that he just established the run at all cost, and like all cost being 2nd and 13 and 3rd and 12, like out of the bye week, you know, 2 weeks they've had to prepare. Their first drive, run it up the middle to Love for no gain two times. I mean, so much for, you know, changing your tendencies coming out of a open right. date. It's absolutely freaking ridiculous to watch them offensively.
Frustrating, man. It's very frustrating because Stanford's got a lot of offensive talent. You mentioned Smith, and you look at the tight ends, and then Arcega-Whiteside, and this got so much talent. They should be so good in the passing game. And David Shaw, what's he do every time? It's a run up the middle on first down for no gain or a 1 yard loss, and it's so freaking annoying. I have a little hesitation always backing Stanford laying points, but I did it against USC. I'm going to do it here against Washington State. I'm going to go ahead and lay the 3 with Stanford. Hopefully David Shaw gets his head out of his ass at some point when it comes to play calling. Like you said, you got to break your tendencies once in a while. It's so predictable, the playbook that David Shaw uses.
Yeah, no question about it. I'd have no idea if you have a feel for this game or a play, but just wanting to know your opinion. I'm not a huge Felipe Franks guy, but Mullen's doing a pretty good job of hiding his weaknesses and doing a great job of play calling, and Florida's defense is outstanding, and I think Georgia lost some confidence at LSU. And look, Georgia is still Florida's little bitch. They are. They will always be our little bitch, even if they're more talented. Love Florida's chances to win outright. Just curious what you think on that one.
First, I'll tell you, I did not play the game, but I was thinking about taking Florida plus 7. I like Georgia a lot coming into the season. I did not like what I was seeing through the first 5 or 6 weeks. When you take on lightweight competition, you really haven't been tested in a street fight yet. And Georgia was just coasting. And that's why I played LSU against Georgia in Baton Rouge a couple weeks ago, because Georgia had not been tested, was going on the road, laying points. And LSU had been tested and away from home. And, the Tigers have been in some street fights, and they were ready for that. And you could tell that day the difference in one team that had been coasting against cupcake competition, the other team that had been in some brawls, and LSU was prepared for that game. And not only that, Kirby Smart with that dumbass fake field goal call, where it's not fourth and one, it's fourth and nine. Fourth and nine, and you're going to try a fake field goal and have your skinny little kicker try to outrun the LSU defense. That was a horrendous play call by Kirby Smart.
And he was copying Les's play. You know, that play where the holder does the no-look pass, that's straight out of the Mad Hatter's playbook.
Yeah.
At the venue where opponents' dreams go to die. So, yes, I agree, dumbass Smart. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, I mean, I go back to, I don't mind fake field goal attempts. Purdue ran one against Ohio State and executed it perfectly. But it's fourth and nine in the Georgia situation. What the hell are you doing? Just a dumb move by Smart. Anyway, I think Jake Fromm's looking over his shoulder a little bit at Justin Fields. Georgia's got to be a little bit more creative with the way they're using their quarterbacks. You got two guys that talented, and they really have like a low-variance offense. I don't think Kirby Smart and the staff done a great job with all the offensive talent Georgia's got to work with. Dan Mullen, on the other hand, you got to be happy as a Gators guy, because I think you got one hell of a coach. I've always thought Dan Mullen's one of the better coaches in college football. He's done a great job turning around the circus that Jim McElwain created in Gainesville. And this really looks like a team with a plan. Well-coached team at this point. I think Florida, even though I'm not a big Felipe Franks guy either, I mean, Georgia's got a distinct edge at the quarterback spot in this game and really more skill position talent. And I'm not going to be surprised. I'm going to say Georgia probably wins the game by 3-6 points, but I'm not going to lay the points with Georgia here. I think it's going to be a dogfight, and Georgia pulls out a close game just because I like Fromm. I think Fields is going to get a little bit more playing time, at least he should. And I can't count on Felipe Franks to win this game, so I'm gonna say Georgia by a field goal, man.
I can live with that, man. I know Franks is he's due a clunker as well. So Iowa goes to Happy Valley. Two teams seemingly going in different directions. 3:30 Eastern kick on ESPN right now. I see PSU minus 6.5 with a total of 52. What you thinking here?
I'm thinking Iowa. I love this defense. And it's number 5 scoring defense in the nation, about 14 points a game. Iowa's 6-1 straight up and against the spread. This is a Hawkeyes team flying under the radar. With Kirk Ferentz, it's always the same deal. Blue collar, tough team. Not very flashy offensively. You got Nate Stanley completing 61% of his passes. He's got 16 TDs. He's solid. You got a rock-solid defense, a solid quarterback. It's not a flashy team, but Iowa's going to go in here to Happy Valley on Saturday. I think he'll give Penn State all it can handle. And Penn State right now is 6.5-point favorite. Trace McSorley, a phenomenal dual-threat playmaker, a quarterback for Penn State, but he's had to do a lot on his own, and he's a little erratic as a passer. I think Penn State's weakness has been exposed here the past few weeks in losses to Ohio State and Michigan State, and that narrow win at Indiana. If you watch that game, the Hoosiers should have won that game. James Franklin is not a very good game manager. In fact, I think he's probably one of the most overrated coaches in college football. I don't like the way Franklin manages games. He chokes away too many big games. I'm going to say the Hawkeyes' defense keeps them in it here. This is going to be another ugly, low-scoring type of game. If the Hawkeyes can contain Trace McSorley, and I believe they can, Iowa's going to have a shot to win. I'm going to give me Iowa plus 6.5.
Yeah, Franklin's really lost me here in the last month. I mean, what he did at Vanderbilt was incredible, but some of the shit coming out of his mouth lately, I'm just like, what are you talking about, man? I mean, I always liked him a lot, and he is he's lost me here last few weeks. Go ahead, Matt.
Quickly, just with Franklin, you go back to the Rose Bowl against USC 2 years ago, and they had the big lead and blew the lead in the second half. With conservative play calling. You go back to last year's Ohio State game where you have a double-digit lead in the second half. You end up blowing that game. Franklin finds ways to blow big games, whether it's with conservative play calling or clumsy game management or whatever it may be. And, I used to like him a little bit better too, but, you know, you watch coaches closely, you see game management's a big deal. Play calling's a big deal. You got to be aggressive. He is not. And some of this just the nonsense this guy pulls, you know, like you said, the post-game press conference against Ohio State where he just went on that rant about, we're not going to be great. We're going to be elite, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's all just a bunch of talk. That's all it is. After you just blew a game to Ohio State, you should have won. And then when he's got a fan, mildly criticizing his play calling as he runs off the field, it's a student from the first row. Franklin freaks out and tries to attack the kid. Did you see that?
Yeah, and I mean,
it's just act like you've been there before and you're an elite college football coach. And James Franklin doesn't handle himself very well. I'm really down on Franklin and Penn State. I love Trace McSorley, man. The kid can play, but he's having to do a lot of this on his own.
Yeah, and I mean, the fourth down play call against Ohio State might be the very single at the top of the fucking charts worst play call in the history of the game of football.
and not only that, you burned two timeouts to get to that play call.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I don't want to hear about Pete Carroll throwing a ball at 1 yard line, not giving to Marshawn Lynch anymore. Franklin topped him on that one. All right, I'm just going to throw out a few SEC games. If you like any of them, great. I kind of like Kentucky plus the 7. You know, Drew Locke is 1-5 TDINT ratio against SEC defenses, 15-1 TDINT against non-conference foes. Now, Kentucky's a little limited offensively, but with the way Locke has struggled against SEC defenses, here comes one of the best, Kentucky plus 7. I like Kentucky. I think we've got a wrong favorite in Starkville. I think A&M should be favored. If you got anything on those or any other game. I think South Carolina's number's a little short against Tennessee as well at 7.5.
That one I do not have an opinion on, but I'm not high on Tennessee, let's put it that way. And I do lean with you in the other two games. I like A&M a little bit. I've seen nothing from Mississippi State that makes me want to back the Bulldogs against A&M this week. I will say that I echo what you said about Drew Locke. I think he struggles against better defenses. I'm a little worried about Kentucky's offense as usual. Kentucky's a little bit like Iowa when it comes to offense, but good enough defensively, I think, to frustrate Drew Locke, and I like Kentucky plus 7 in that game.
Wrapping up with Matt Eumanns of VSiN. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Eumanns, Eumanns, and then 247. I know you got to run, bro, but if there's one NFL pick you want to throw out to our listeners, have at it.
All right, I'll go with the Broncos plus 10 this week. I know it's not cool to fade the Chiefs, and it's not tough to do, and I haven't tried to do it in the past couple weeks, but I think this spot here, Broncos, a couple extra days to prepare. They do have the defensive front with Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, where they can put some pressure on Patrick Mahomes, and Broncos do have some offensive weapons. Keith Keenum just has not been able to find a rhythm and make it work. I think you're getting to the point here where the inflation on the Kansas City lines will make me start to look at the dog in some of these games, because let's face it, this is the NFL. Eventually, all teams cool off at some point. And I was on the Chiefs last Sunday night against the Bengals. didn't have a great NFL day, but that was a good way to finish it. Never had to sweat that. I think the Chiefs are in for a much tougher time here against the Broncos. This is a game where they came back from rematch of a game where they came back from 10 down in the fourth quarter to beat the Broncos by 4 in Denver on a Monday night about a month ago. I just like the way Denver matches up against the Kansas City offense. I think they're playing a little bit better defensively. They destroyed the Cardinals a week ago Thursday with a defensive force and turnovers. They got some pressure on the quarterback. Maybe it takes backdoor cover to get there. Who knows? But at double digits, give me Broncos plus 10.
Great stuff, Matt. Follow him on Twitter at MattHumans247. Check out all his content on VSIN.com. That's VSIN.com. Thanks for your time, bro, and I'll look you up this weekend, man.
Hey, you bet. Have a good trip to Vegas. We'll see you.
All right, buddy. Be good. All righty. Let's we don't even need to take a break, do we, Jason?
No.
No. Let's get a Hawks score. Let's see how my over's looking. And by the way, listeners, my Hawks, they're not very good, but their overs are perfect so far. 3-0. And, I mean, how about the – don't you remember, Jason, or I don't know if you've ever bet many NBA totals, but, I mean, it was just 5 or 6 years ago where you would rarely get an NBA total above 205. And very rare would it be anywhere near 220. And basically tonight's entire board is totals in the 220s and 230s. There's a couple of exceptions, but not many. But until Atlanta game doesn't go over, I say take Atlanta over. And right now they're midway through the first, and it's 26-14 Dallas. I took over 236. And so that is that. I had the under on the Clippers game last night. The Lakers are still winless. I mean, how can America not love that? I mean, just about as much as you loved Purdue last week. All right, so I gave out – I like Kentucky. I like Florida. I like A&M. Let me pull up some statistical things on those games. Let's see here. And I like South Carolina as well, and I like Boston College. I don't even know why Miami's favored. Those boys do not like the cold weather. They're going back to Malik Rozier. Why? Don't ask me. Boston College gets A.J. Dillon back. He missed back-to-back games with an ankle. He's run for 652 yards, 6 touchdowns, 6.2 yards per carry average. They were 4-1 straight up, 3-2 against the spread before he got hurt. Without him, they lost 28-23 at NC State. Boy, NC State was a fraud, huh? You know they were gonna play West Virginia in a hurricane suspended game, but boy, Clemson put it on them. I made BC a 4-point favorite against Miami. Miami's 3.5. All about Boston College up in that cold weather. Let's see. NFL, let me get my lines out here. Baltimore at Carolina. Man, Baltimore screwed me. Can you believe Tucker missed that extra point? He never missed one. It looked right down the middle. Did you see the highlight of it?
Dude, I saw the highlight of it, and ESPN like had the graphic of the ball path. And just like it looks like it's going straight, and then just veers off, and then poor Justin Tucker, that is going to be a gif for the rest of his career, just his facial reaction when he missed that kick.
Which was better, that or Baker Mayfield when you guys made your kick? Baker Mayfield, he couldn't believe it. He was shocked.
That was just a crazy just couple of minutes there in our game. But yeah, but Justin Tucker, I mean, this guy's, you know, what was it? He'd hit 222 straight?
22. Yeah, that's crazy. Or that's his career. He's never had missed an extra point.
Well, think about this, Brian. I mean, obviously you've been placing bets on games for a long time. Since they've changed the extra point rule, that has completely changed the NFL game.
No doubt, and I like it. I wish they'd do it in college too. Maybe not that far, but back it up 7 or 8 yards, or you know.
You have to imagine that's coming to a college game in the very near future.
I would hope so. It definitely has added a lot of just variables. I mean, you know,
And once you miss that kick, you're chasing points.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. You know, I hate the Saints rallied and won that game because the Saints have a brutal schedule coming up. I mean, you know, the Falcons and the Bucks could still get back in this thing, and Carolina rallied too. We could have both. Well, I would have just assumed you guys lost too, obviously. But it could have easily been the Falcons the only division winner this past week. But Carolina's got to host Baltimore this week. They're a short home dog. What a fabulous comeback by the Panthers. Their biggest comeback in franchise history, I think I saw, read, heard, what have you. Wow, the Giants are a mess. I mean, a big mess.
And it looks like they're just cleaning house before the trade deadline.
They traded Eli Apple. Did they trade anybody else?
They traded a defensive tackle that they drafted, was all pro in 2016. I mean, this is, and I know a lot of people have raised this question. I mean, like, is Tom Coughlin picking up the phone call and asking the Giants what the cost is for Eli Manning?
I mean, if anybody would give away more than a sixth or seventh round pick for that guy, they're nuts. He's so washed up and done, don't you think? And what's his body language out there, man? He was missing passes and, like, doing this body language, blaming it on the receivers.
It just makes you how much that's just more mental than anything else.
Right.
That he's just lost confidence.
Are the Jags not one to entertain Kaepernick? I have no idea. I mean, they wouldn't even sign Tebow when Tebow would have put seats or put fannies in the seats, I should say, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the move of Carlos Hyde, the trade, was kind of interesting last week. I mean, you make that trade on a Friday where, I think running back is one of those positions a guy can come in and pretty much play immediately just because, you know, power is power, off tackle is off tackle, counter is counter. But I thought that was a major sign that obviously Leonard Fournette's not coming back anytime soon.
Right. And was the story with Leonard Fournette on draft night. That was the story with him throughout his LSU tenure. The dude can't stay on the field. And I mean, sometimes it's like you're thinking he's really not that hurt. I mean, like he nursed an ankle for like 5 weeks at LSU. And I'm just like, dude, I mean, what's going on, man? You're walking around fine for a month now. You can't play.
I think that running style he has, I mean, that to me is just not a running style that screams longevity.
Sure. Sure. Well, they got one good year out of him last year. They did do that. Let's see. I don't eat chalk like this much, Jason, but I'm very tempted to lay 24 with Oklahoma at home against K-State. Kyler Murray is just absolutely lighting it up, man. And I know he's short, and I know he's got a Major League Baseball career ahead of him, and supposedly this is like his 1 year playing football, and then he's gone to, you know, do the minors. But let me see what they list him at in the Oklahoma on his Oklahoma page, man. This guy is just lighting it up, and he's so doggone fast.
Don't they list him like 6'1"?
I mean, shit, there's no way. I'm not saying they don't list him, but there's no way 6'1". They list him 5'11". What is Drew Brees? 6 foot?
I think he's 5'11".
Well, then, you know what, then? Kyler Murray can play in the NFL, then. I mean, I'm not saying he's got the brains of Drew Brees, obviously, but he's got speed galore. And if Drew Brees – and I went to – I saw – it was back when I was a Falcons season ticket holder, before he went to New Orleans, when he was with the Chargers. And obviously, I've been to some Saints games. And I know you've seen a ton of Bucs Saints games. It's crazy when you're used to looking at a quarterback who stands so much taller in the pocket and you see Brees, but – he just makes such great decisions. I mean, good Lord, he leads the NFL in career passing yards. And go ahead.
The thing that jumps out to you, and like you said, I've had a chance to watch a ton of Drew Brees games, is just how quickly he goes to one receiver to another, and then he comes back to that receiver he passed up on. It's just crazy to see him do it.
I think he's better than Peyton mentally. In terms of exactly the way you just described it, you see how his eyes go one way, the second option, the third option, the fourth option. But he's got that time clock in his head. He knows when people are going to be there, and when he drops it off to the back, he rarely gets sacked. He's amazing. And I mean, he's like Brady, man. He doesn't look like he's slowing down at all.
No, man. It's, you know, the Saints are, you know, just as, you know, someone who enjoys football, they're just one of those teams that you just sit there and you enjoy watching them. I mean, you want to talk about some games that are going to interest you, Brian, coming up with the Saints. November 4th, Rams at Saints.
Yeah.
November 19th, 8 o'clock game, Chiefs at Rams.
Woo!
What is going to be the over-under number on those games?
Chiefs, Rams. I mean, it'll probably get to 60. Let me see. The Rams have been they played pretty good defense, but they've got a lot of guys out on defense. They've only given up, 10, 12? Well, Seattle and Minnesota lit them up. The over, wow, they've been having some high totals. The over is actually the under's 4-3 overall for the Rams. Their highest total has been 52. Let me look at the Chiefs. Chiefs, wow, they had 59.5 against New England, and that thing flew over. Yeah, the over is 4-3 for the Chiefs. Only team in the NFL that has covered every game, is what I'm trying to say. All righty, let's see. What else? Any other UFC stuff to get at? Let me look here. What do you think about Brunson catching that big number against Adesanya?
The question I think ultimately is, how does Derek Brunson fight? If he fights like the way he fought Robert Whittaker, you know, a year and a half ago, he likely loses. But I like the comeback on Brunson there.
I mean, Adesanya, he almost lost. Who was that young European guy that gave him fits? Wasn't it a split decision? I like that guy. Is that guy fought again? Here, I'll look him up. Sorry.
Well, he's coming off that that win against Brad Tavares, which was a tough fight that he had. Are you thinking about the fight against Marvin Vettori?
Yes, Vettori. I liked him, man.
Yeah. He brought the fight to him, man. You know, Marvin.
And that guy's a really young guy, right? Isn't he like? Or I'm pulling him up now.
Yeah, Marvin's fairly young. He's Italian. He had moved to California about a year and a half ago to kind of, you know, train over here full time, which, I mean, you kind of see that happen with a lot of fighters. They train over here. I think the interesting thing, did you see Conor McGregor's Instagram post yesterday?
I did. Did you see Khabib come back with, it's just business?
Well, I mean, look, one of the things I've always said that's fascinating about Conor is listening to him talk after a fight is over, but There was a part in that article, in that comment, that made me wonder, is he thinking about making some changes in how he trains? And I just, you know, who knows what he meant there. But this is the thing about the Khabib camp. Whenever this rematch does happen, let's be honest about it, a good chance the rematch is going to happen at some point. They have to realize they're the B side of the fight. They're not going to be the A side. No, whoever Conor McGregor's fighting, Conor McGregor's the A side. It doesn't matter who's on the other side of the octagon. You're the B side.
And on that note, because Dana already came out and said it's going to be Ferguson, what would you rather see? Dustin 2, Nate 3? I'm talking about with Conor, obviously. So Conor-Dustin rematch, Conor-Nate trilogy, Connor Aldo too. I mean, basically, there's if we're talking 155, and I know Aldo is down to come up to 155. I mean, aren't Aldo, Dustin, and Nate really our three only options? I mean, I know there are other options, but I mean, like Kevin Lee, I mean, I know he could give him hell and might would beat Connor, but I mean, he's just not a big enough name. I mean, aren't Dustin, Aldo, and Nate really the only three that have a big enough name for to be Connor's next fight? What do you think on that?
The one fight I'd love to see, and I don't know if it ever happened, how about Connor versus Justin Gaethje?
Oh, no, I thought about that, too. Abso-freaking-lutely. Well, actually, what I really thought about was what about Gaethje against Nate? That's what I want to see. But either one works.
From a money aspect, the Nate trilogy, I think it's a fight that makes the most sense. I would say number two would be Aldo. Three, Dustin. But from a pure entertainment fun fight, man, Connor versus Justin, that'd be a hell of a fight.
I was about to say, what about Dustin Gaethje? And then I'm like, oh, wait, that's going to be fight of the year this year. I already watched that. I want to watch that again, though. And by the way, I looked up Marvin Vettori. He has not fought since then and doesn't have a fight scheduled. And that was back on April 14th. So no prediction on what that – and when any idea on when Connor wants to get back in there?
Well, he has to get through the commission. Oh, that's right. This first. Yeah, really. I mean, until that happens, my guess is you probably, you know, if he can walk out of that clean late spring, early summer next year.
Jeez.
But he's got to get through the commission aspect of it first. So that's kind of the unknown.
Yeah. God, always in trouble, buddy. You're always in trouble. All right. All right, just so quickly in review, my Gators are going to kick Georgia's ass this weekend. Kentucky's going to cover at Missouri. They might win. South Carolina's going to cover and win by two touchdowns against Tennessee or more. By the way, I talked to Russell Smith of Fox Sports Knoxville this morning. He said Garantano during the brief 15 minutes that the media was allowed to watch of the Vols practice yesterday, Garantano got all the first team reps. Keller Crist played the Stanford grad transfer, played pretty good last week, threw two touchdown passes against Bama in the second quarter. But Garantano had been playing really well, was off a career game against Auburn, had like a chest or ribs or some kind of internal injury early, left the game, but apparently he's probable and probably going to be the starter against South Carolina. And by the way, DJ Wonnum is going to be back for South Carolina. He's been out since week one, spraining an ankle. I think it was a little more severe than what Fournette was dealing with, as I previously noted. But Wonnum is back, third team All-SEC last year. Let me go through my notes. Are there any other injuries? We talked about Lewerke for Michigan State. He's a question mark. Where's my, let me just go through and look at, Minnesota's quarterback is a question mark. Zach Anikstad. I think I'm pronouncing that right. FAU's quarterback, Robeson. He is a question mark. TCU's quarterback is out for the season. One of my losses last week was Army. I bought the hook to 7. They're up 21-7 second half, but Kelvin Hopkins, their quarterback, was probable all week, and then he didn't even play. He's questionable this week. Army at Eastern Michigan, the Eagles. I really like that team. They have won back-to-back games, straight up and against the spread. Colorado stud receiver, LaVisca Chenault. 60 catches, 780 yards, 11 touchdowns. He couldn't play last week. He's questionable with turf toe this week. Oregon State's QB, Connor Blunt, doubtful with a concussion as the Beavers are in Boulder. Let's see. USC's freshman quarterback is a question mark. JT Daniels. They've also got a laundry list of injuries. Obviously, Porter Gustin out for the year. We probably hit on that last week. Let's see. Ellinger is questionable to come back, but, you know, they've got Bouchel, who's pretty good. They are at Oak State. Boy, Oak State's a mess. Oak State is a mess right now. And let's see what else. Khalil Tate is questionable to come back. He's missed. I know he missed last week. Did he miss the week before that as well, or maybe left early? Anywho, so there you have it. Any Bucks injuries to update us on? Let me go to their report.
Quan Alexander's out for the season, torn ACL. Oh,
and Jack Ceci from Wisconsin. Yeah, back. Did he get any playing time?
Yeah, he was playing special teams. He was active every game. I know they picked up a linebacker today, Kai, who wants to say last played in Arizona. So, you know, they've got those injuries. You know, obviously Gerald McCoy didn't play last week. And it'll be interesting to kind of see how, you know, what Cincinnati look like after the thumping they took on Sunday night. Oof.
Yeah, they've got Burfict. It's questionable. John Ross, the special teams, Dynamo out of Washington, UW, not the Redskins. He is out indefinitely. Eifert's been out a while, the tight end. Bernard, the running back's been out a while. We shall see. We shall see. Come on, Baltimore. Beat Carolina and come on. Who they ain't Scott this week? Where the? Oh, they're at Minnesota. Oh, that's the night game at Minnesota. Pick them.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the commercial that NBC's been playing for that one?
I don't think so. Remind me.
About what happened last year in the playoffs with the miracle touchdown?
The safety out of Utah. Give me two. I'm shooting a blank on his name. But, yeah, he made a dumb. And the thing I forgot, I read this not too long ago. He had an interception earlier in that game. Marcus Williams, wasn't that his name?
Yeah, rookie, right?
He was a rookie last year, yeah. What have they been doing? They've just been showing the replay of that play?
Oh, yeah. I mean, God, for those poor Saints defensive players, because you know that is the only play that's being talked about all week long. But it's a great game, man. It's Minnesota, man, there's a lot, you know, a lot of talent on that team. Obviously, a lot of talent on the Saints. I mean, the thing of the Saints has always been is can they get a defense to match their offense?
I'm not saying they're matching it, but they're definitely improved defensively. Oh, they'll never have a defense that'll match it. But you know, the Super Bowl year, they weren't like salty on defense, but they created a lot of turnovers. Tracy Porter, pick six, delicious.
It's like I saw a note I want to say last week I was looking at some fantasy stuff where they were talking about how Sean Payton's basically trying to do like a 50-50 split between Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, and I don't understand that, Brian. Seeing Alvin Kamara over, you know, now seeing him three times over the last 2 years, I mean, that kid, I mean, just how much of that is a scheme and whatnot, but man, I just don't know how you can't keep that guy on the field.
Well, I think part of it is you want to have him over the long haul, and he just doesn't have the muscle and the weight that Ingram does to take that pounding. I think that has everything to do with it.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to, you know, I don't know. I always live by the theory. You got to have your best weapons on the field at all times.
Right. No, I get what you're saying. I'd rather have it in his hands than Ingram if I'm a Saints fan, but I'm not a Saints fan.
Look, in my fantasy draft this year, I took David Johnson over Alvin Kamara. Not really feeling too good about that one.
Ooh, no. No,
David Johnson got paid, and I don't watch much Arizona Cardinal football, but I can tell you he hasn't done much in fantasy football for me.
Right, right. God, I'm looking at some NFL QB stats. So Mahomes is 22-5 TDINT. Andrew Luck's 20-8. Rivers, God, the ageless Philip Rivers. He has a house where I live. 17-3 TDINT. Matty Ice, 71.1% completions, 15-2 TDINT. We lost another O-lineman for the season, though. Two Falcons starting O-linemen out for the season, in addition to Keanu, obviously, Gator. And, wow, Breeze has not thrown a pick yet, 13-0 TDINT. Kirk Cousins, 14-3 TDINT. Did you see Kerryon Johnson? Maybe Stafford has a running game the first time ever in his career. I want to see those division standings in that division. Let's get there. Where are we? NFL standings. That division's completely up for grabs, is it not? Oh, Vikings 4-2-1. Packers a game, or I'm sorry, a half game back at 3-2-1. Lions and Bears 3-3. So that would have them what, 1.5 games back, or?
I want to say I saw the standings earlier. I think Green Bay would be the sixth seed at 4-2 right now.
Vegas Insider is showing the Packers 3-2-1. Is that incorrect?
Let me double check here.
Well, VI's had a couple of little issues here lately. Let me see. 1-2. No, they're 3-2-1, right?
I'm pulling it up here. Let's do the old conference standings.
The over is 5-1 for the Packers.
Yeah. Green Bay at 3-2-1 would be the sixth seed right now.
Okay. And the Redskins, that was a little knockdown, drag out defensive struggle against the Cowgirls last week. But Bucks are only two games back of the Saints, and right now you own the tiebreaker with them. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, the Bucks got an interesting stretch right now. The next three or four, we're on the road at Cincy, at Carolina, then home game against Washington, and then at the Giants. This is gonna be a tough stretch. You know, it's not easy winning on the road. It doesn't matter, you know, who you're playing. It's never easy.
No, it's not. But I would think y'all win it in New York. And when are they gonna yank Eli? Who do they have behind him? Davis Webb and here's my magazine. Eli is done, dude. He is done. He is washed up.
Well, I mean, look, especially if Sam Darnold's lighting it up, you know, with the Jets, there's going to be a lot of Giants fans that are going to look back at this draft and say, I mean, look, Saquon Barkley is an unbelievable player, but, you know, if you got a chance to take a franchise quarterback, you got to take the franchise quarterback.
I'm not really drinking the Darnold Kool-Aid like everybody else. I'm not that high on him. We'll see. He has his moments. I mean, he looked great against Detroit in the opener. I know he's had some good games. I just am not that into Darnold. I saw him make some big mistakes the other day. I mean, look, he's a rookie. I get it. He's not on the best team. So, anywho. All right, man. I think that's going to wrap things up. Follow me on Twitter at Vegas B. Edwards. Follow our at Games Galore Pod if you want to follow that. Follow RadioInfluence.com, the MMA Report, at Jason_Floyd. Good luck with your bets and your ball games. I will be in Vegas and having a good old time this weekend. And that's about all I got. You got any last words, Jay Floyd? Any warnings? Any warnings for the Clemson Tigers and Dabo?
No.
Doesn't sound like it. Look.
You know, what'd be the right way to describe this, Brian? The Noles struggle up front.
Yes, they do. Is it gonna be a sellout? You know, it's crazy. I feel like I see empty seats in every stadium. Is that just a national problem these days? I mean, is it a high definition, a desire for air conditioning? Well, hell, we're almost in November. I see so many empty seats in every stadium.
I mean, I think it's, I mean, you know, I mean, look, I'm the type of person, if I'm home on a weekend, you know, I'm sitting on the couch. I got one game on TV. I got a game on one computer, a game on another computer, a game on the iPad. You know, you get kind of, sure. you know, it's, I mean, look, it's a 4-hour drive for me to get to Tallahassee. And anyone who's done that drive from Tampa to Tallahassee, that's not a very fun drive.
Yep.
A lot of trees. Yep.
I never got to it, and I'm not going to get into it, but those three guys got found guilty today in the College Hoops corruption trial. Christian Dawkins and Gatto, I think it was the Adidas guy, and Merle Code. And Merle Code. I mean, I remember Merle Code was a hell of a point guard at Clemson way back in the day. All right, that's it. Games Galore 54 in the books. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. We need stats. We need sponsors. Help us out. And check out BrianEversports.com for all my picks. I'll have some more posted. Over and out.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
The world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Now, it's no longer called that because, political correctness. You don't want to talk about drinking and things like that. But the game's played in Jacksonville, right along that Florida-Georgia line. No, not the country music group. I'm talking about the border between the two states, Chris. but why? What makes this rivalry so great, and what makes this just the scene to be seen in college football?
It's
because I would rank it right up there with the Red River Shootout.
Yes,
because you know you have the Texas State Fair and then everyone goes and tailgates and whatnot. But this is right up there in terms of atmospheres in college football, tailgate wise, and of course the rivalry.
Yeah, it is. Well, you hit on it. It's the locale. I mean, it's still a short flight for Georgia and a bus ride for Florida, mm-hmm. but it's right there. I mean, it's, you know, the irony is Texas and OU, it's the same exact
miles. It's exactly right in the middle. It's like, I think it's like 1 mile difference or something like that.
Yeah, it's just, it's incredible. But this is, you've got the border, a border state. Historically, you know, obviously even before the days of the split and being in the East-West, they played every year. And the recruiting battles were always, hefty. And it, to be honest with you, it was Georgia, Florida, and then Alabama, Tennessee. Now, in the old days of General Nealon and then, you know, early days of Johnny Majors, then Alabama, Tennessee was big because those were really, really good. Florida wasn't very good for years. Georgia had the, you know, under Wally Butts and before Vince Dooley, they were much better. Florida didn't get good. Even when Steve Spurrier played, they just – that Florida just was not much of a program, quite frankly. They're a new program. But then once Florida got really good, particularly Charlie Pell and then Galen Hall, but then more importantly when Steve Spurrier, then they dominated Georgia. There was a discussion along the lines down the road to play the game at least Georgia wanted it, and Florida said, no, we'll keep it. Steve Spurrier's the one that said, no, let's keep it. Hell, it's still a bus ride for us, and it's still in the state. But it's the combination that it's one of the more unique things and that it was a neutral site.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Leandry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.